Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hi, Amy. Welcome to Retro Next Podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
So happy to have you here. So for our listeners, this is a little bit different. This is a nonfiction author. We're talking about a book about the wellness industry. I do have recommendations if you wanted to listen to some more books or actually recent books about topical authority. This is topical authority. This is our history. I call it that, my history. But there are books that talks about it in fiction form. So just a little bit of everything. But Trina, let's get to the interview. So Amy, talk to us about How to Be Well and a little bit of approach.
You know? So I wrote this book after I was working as the fashion director at New York Magazine, where I worked for 20 years, which is really a long time. And I really spent a long time thinking about how women are sold products, how women are sold things and convinced that we need to own certain things to portray the version of ourselves we'd like to be to the world, to belong, to communicate with people, to communicate the ideas we have about ourselves to the outside world. I did a street style column, one of the first street style columns for a really long time. And in those days, it really wasn't outside of fashion shows. It was just on the streets of the city. And it was like, my deep and burning question was always like, what are you trying to say to us before you open your mouth? Like, what are you trying to tell us with what you wear, with how you present yourselves to the city? And it was like, all walks of life. So I was really interested in how that worked. I just started feeling like all anyone is talking about is wellness. Like It's becoming much more democratic. Everyone has access to fashion shows. And that is pushing our desire for exclusivity elsewhere. Also, simultaneously, we are really struggling with ideas about equality and who deserves access to care in this country. And a lot of those conversations are coming to the surface. And this is all coming together and it's all being called this thing called wellness. So it's just sort of taking over every aspect of our lives. You're hearing it in politics, you're hearing it in fashion, you're hearing it in beauty. It's just taking over. And I was like, I got to get in here. So I just sort of dove in and I just started trying to like pull this thing apart. And it's deep and there's sort of nothing it's not affecting. And it made me think a lot about really everything. It made me think about feminism. It made me think about the political climate in our country. It made me think about how we as women are treated and how we present our bodies. It made me as a mother think a lot about how I want my daughters to feel about their bodies and about their self-presentation. Yeah, I can't really think of anything wellness doesn't affect in our day-to-day lives. And it was funny, when I was selling the book, I was going from publishing house and they would say, okay, wellness, like, is it either a guide or is it an expose? And I was like, how could you be one or the other? Like, it is so in our lives. What woman could say, oh, I'm all for or I'm all against wellness? Like, it's got its tentacles in all of us. So we're going to have to just cope with the fact that like none of us are able to be like, I'm giving up on wellness or I'm all pro wellness. Like, no, we can't. We don't live in such a binary world. Like, we're going to just have to navigate it because we're all stuck. And what it is more is like an attempt to kind of understand how we got here, why we're here, and what the hell we're going to do about it, and how we're not just going to be sitting ducks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think I shared with you earlier, like over email, I live in New York 2006 to 2020. Mm-hmm. I had an untreated eating disorder that I found recovery in New York. New York is a great place
not
to
alone.
Find.
I mean,
that finally recovered. As long as like immediately at that point, it's off. It's like, what else can you expect? And I just got immersed in this world because there was so much. There were so many.
So doubts. Normalized, right?
Normalized. It was just like normal. Like you can do it in our country. You can have a Reiki master. You can go to boutique fitness. You had the class bus. We had like the smoothie shops, the specific things. Like, it was just like, it was
wonderful. Yeah.
And everyone wanted to be a girl boss. Everyone wanted to be a life coach. And they wanted to have these like topics of spirituality and changes. And I was immersed in that world. And then I detoxified. I somehow stumbled upon.
And you could come up with, like, as long as you didn't say, oh, I'm just going to go practice my eating disorder. You could call it anything. And as long as you called it something else, you could practice your eating disorder in public easily, right? I'm on a fast. I'm on a detox.
The blueprint. You mentioned the blueprint. And I was like, oh, I remember that. The coolers.
The cooler. The blueprint cooler.
The colonics. I had a nutritionist who told me I needed to get a colonic.
I love that, right?
Because that's what it was like, will heal me from the Atreida eating disorder.
Yeah. Oh, I know a great way to heal yourself from an eating disorder. Like basically become a bulimic.
I was actually bulimic and I was told to do the colonic.
Change the exit mechanism, right?
Yeah. Or since maybe it makes
sense. I know. But I can't tell you how many women were like, I cured my eating disorder. I now just get colonics twice a week. And I was like, these are smart. These are intelligent women. And you're like, okay.
So, yeah. So I appreciate your take on, because you came from a place of compassion. Place of like actually like looking at like, we're not dumb.
I'm in
we're
it not, too. Believe me. Like I have I'm not above any of it. Like, I have been in all of this, and I mean, that's what I mean, is like, it's like, I can't tell you that I'm in any sort of position to, like, write an expose or disdain anyone. Like, we are all in this together. Like, we have got to say, like, if you are above this marketing, if you are above or immune to any of this, like, congratulations. Hats off to you, because like, it's hard. It's really hard. And we're conditioned from such a young age to think that one aspect of being a woman in America is to improve yourself, right? Like, to constantly be engaged in the process of becoming a better version of yourself. And to do any less is to somehow sort of slack, right? Like, you should be striving to be thinner, better. You never want to stop, right? And like, the woman who's immune to that, if you've met her, like, tell me. I've never met her, right? Like, we're all on a cleanse, a detox, a 30 days to this. I was catching up with a childhood friend and we were remembering some diet we went on. I think we were in like seventh grade with like, and it was like the 80s, right? So we ate, I think it was a hot dog and an ice cream.
Oh,
something like, it was disgusting. And
what was the cowish diet?
It was in 17 magazine. You got it out of 17 magazine.
Yes.
So you're conditioned from a very young age to think that there's some better version of you and you should be trying to achieve it all the time. And if there's an American woman who doesn't believe that she should constantly be engaged in the process of trying to achieve that, I haven't met her.
Yeah, I mean, there's always, I used to tell this to my therapist, and this is something I'm working on, is that this goal-oriented, this idea that you're always striving for something, you're always striving, and no matter what you reach that level, you always have something else to go off for.
Totally.
Like, you never find satisfaction.
Except for maybe Gwyneth, because she's achieved it, so good for her.
Yeah, it just changes. It's like the ever-growing changes, and you're just trying to figure out, like, how I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
And you just, and so the only way, at least the way I had to find out, is like, I had to stop doing that. Stopping.
Absolutely.
Like, I was like, no, I'm just not going to do that. And it's not linear. It is not perfect.
And you're going to have days, and you're going to have, as I always say to my kids, like, it doesn't go like this, right? Like, it's not going to be like this.
No, and it's just like the process. So I think a lot of the wellness is like, will this fix me? Will this fix my problem? Will this fit? Like, there are people who are well-intentioned about it and you share about this, but there's also the predatory, the people who are looking for the quick win, the $1 million, the income claims, the sense of like, I have the aspirational life. And I think social media has helped reach that, because you see this idea of this wellness world, like I do this and I have this solution and this is the way you should go.
Yeah, abs and knees, yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk about the layers of the wellness industry. What's most surprising for you, knowing what you know now, but what you were knowing beforehand? Because we all partake. Like, it was in our face. It was just part of our well-being, and especially in the communities that we hang out in that moment. Like, it was part of it. But what was surprising now from what you know after doing all this research?
Things that really surprised me were, one thing that I was really interested in was in looking back over the history of the wellness movements over time, I became very interested in what a repetition a lot of these themes are historically. So I became very interested in this period of time around the Industrial Revolution in Germany, when people were moving away from their agrarian lifestyles and moving to the cities to work in factories and away from farms because the culture in Germany was industrializing. And that was when you had a lot of people getting involved in a very, like, a wellness movement, right? Like, you had a back to land movement that involved health food, giving up alcohol, and a yearning for a more pure lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Because people were leaving these close-knit family communities and they were going to the city to seek work. And that work was dirty and that work was polluting, right? It was bad for the lungs and it was urban and you weren't in the beautiful bucolic Bavarian countryside anymore. You were in the city. And so you saw a lot of things about health food and hiking in the forest and purity. And there were publications and there were like grainy loaves of bread and all these kind of things that you're like, oh, that looks a lot like a sort of something you might get at Erewhon. And what's interesting is that movement ended up splitting. And you had some of the, it's called Lebensreform, life reform. And you had some of the followers of the Lebensreform movement come to the United States and start what became like the sort of hippie movement. They opened health, natural food stores in California and became sort of precursors of American hippies. And then you had some who stayed in Germany and became Völkisch movement, which translated into Nazis. If you look at the parallels for what's going on in the United States now, you have the technological revolution, right? So you have people moving away from a more communal life and moving onto their screens. And you have a lot of panic about what that's doing to people's health, right? People aren't up, people aren't walking around, people aren't socializing, people aren't in community in the same way. Throw COVID into the mix, people are more isolated than ever. And you have a lot of repetition of these themes that were coming up during the Industrial Revolution. And then you have a lot of sort of wellness responses to a lot of these societal changes. And then when you look at how these wellness responses vary, some of them really move to the left and some of them move to the right. And especially right now, you can see with vaccine skepticism, a lot of the RFK Maha stuff, that reactions to the fear of society changing very quickly, as it did in the Industrial Revolution, as it's doing now in the technology revolution, you can see that both the right and the left, there are panicked responses that come from both the right and the left. And it's really just a fear of change. It's a fear of change coming too quickly. And it's a fear of sort of very human things being taken away. Mm-hmm. A fear of, in this case, losing our ability to socialize in person, losing our ability to be together in community. In the technological revolution, it was our fear to work with our hands in the earth, right? We've given up on that, right? We're over that. This one is about our humanity, right? Our ability to be together as people and our fear of robots and our fear of... So I think that was something that just absolutely fascinated me. And I just like couldn't think about anything else. When I started thinking about that, I was like, oh my God, I can't think about anything else. Especially
now. Yeah, if you
look, yeah, and they're already done with the book by this election. But I was like,
yes.
Well,
but we have to think about the COVID all right, like the wellness
of quarantine. Now with like measles outbreak in Texas, I'm just like,
yes.
Yeah, especially now. Yeah. So that's pretty overwhelming. So I was really interested in that. That was something that really like just got me thinking on a very deep level about what's going on. And I was just fascinated by it. I was also fascinated about working on this book during some of the social changes around like the Black Lives Matter movement and learning about the origins of the term self-care.
Yes, that is fascinating.
Yeah, really fascinating, and how it came out of these Black Panther care, these Black Panther clinics.
And the need, the actual need for self-care.
Self-care.
Which is like where we commodifies and why.
I know, and there's always this sandwich board like in front of a spa, like on my street. I'd be like, Yeah, and I'm like, oh my God, can you imagine that this was like this term that was like in front of these like women's clinics in the Black Panther, like Oakland, right, in the 60s. And you're like, and now, like, so, but it's like, but it's also really interesting because I think it's like, you know, in the way, I don't know, it's just, so the evolution of this idea of self-care and these like groups of people who have had to say very correctly, I live in a society that has absolutely does not care about my well-being. So therefore, I have to like care for myself, right? Like that's the origin of this term. And, you know, Black women can say very honestly and very correctly that like this country has not valued their health and at all. And so self-care became for women, yes, and for Black women, yes, like these are intersectional groups, but that like women and specifically women of color have had their care neglected. And so self-care has meant this like very specific thing. And of course it's like morphed and commodified and like become this whole thing. And it's like, then you've got like Ivanka Trump tweeting like self-care is not selfish. And you're like, oh. Yeah. Okay. Now,
but then again, we don't have universal health care. So what are we talking
about?
Yeah.
Like we're going to maybe draw the line like somewhere. Like I would maybe say we draw the line with you. But yeah. So it's like, so things like just getting into some of the historical context and also like self-care and a medical thing was a kind of diagnostic tool that hospitals would use also for compromised patients to say like self-care, like is this patient capable of self-care? If we were to discharge this patient, can this patient get herself to the bathroom? Can this patient, like, what level of self-care? So like the words self-care and like what the words meant and then what they meant politically. And like, so the whole evolution of the term self-care, I found really fascinating when you think about like how quickly and easily it's used right now. So I was very interested in like, those were some of the topics that I really enjoyed going deep on.
Yeah, I now think about it like where I was in the 2010s, like self-care with commodification. It was like,
it was like,
and that was like,
it's going to fix, not judging. Like, it's okay. Like, I'm all for people taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
I also like, I don't like, if you're feeling bad and you need to like go and
Mother's Day is coming, go take an apartment, go take a hotel by yourself. It is okay.
I had to get like, I'm going to be 50 next year. And like, I had to get my first colonic, or not, I say colonic. Oh my God, I have to not say colonic.
No, the actual colonoscopy.
You never have to get a colonic, okay?
No. You don't have to
get a colonoscopy.
You never need to do a coffee enema either.
You do never
want to go out the bus.
Get a colonoscopy. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to stay at home the night before the prep. Like, I do not. Like, I don't want my kids coming in and being like, I don't want to get my math homework or like, what's for dinner? Or have you seen my cleats or whatever they were going to ask for? I was like, I'm going to a hotel and I'm going to like take the prep in a hotel room across the street from the place. And I don't want to be in an Uber. Like I'm going to do my prep in a hotel room and then I'm going to waddle across the street. Like, that's how I'm going to do it. And like, it was great. I was like, this is like one of those really expensive Swiss spas. Basically, like, watch TV, take my nasty stuff. Like, I was like, okay, this, no apologies for this.
No, I think there's like a matter of like, it's a lot of times we're trying to justify why we're taking care of ourselves or justifying why we make the decisions that we make.
And,
for ourselves.
And it's fine. Like, I'm all in favor of like, all in favor of everyone. Like, look, like, we all just got, we're all just trying to make it through. And I'm, Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think I really, like, it's never my goal to shame anyone for anything they want to do. But I do want us to, and I'm very, I really mean what I say at the end of the book, when I say, like, this is really like a love letter to my girls. Like, this is just about, like, I just don't want us to, I want us to feel some more ownership over doing this. And I want us to do it because we want to, or I don't want us to feel so desperate. I don't want us to feel like we have to, or it's like just like a little bit more awareness when we make these choices called wellness of what they are, when they are entertainment, when they are health, when they are like, what are these boundaries? Why are we making these choices?
Yeah. I think I have to tell you, I find your book so validating and so empowering in the sense of like, it gave a voice of what I went through, what I go through, and like where I am right now, which is like, yes, I'm in a wellness journey. Like, I am on the GLP-1s, but I'm doing the exercise and doing lifestyle tweaks. I learned how to eat, but I'm doing it in a way that my eating disorder is not noisy and all these different things. And I think your book actually allowed me to see, like, to have discernment of like, what is what my body needs, what's what I want, and then what is society telling me to do. And there's something empowering, like I'm in my 40s and I don't give a fuck what people think.
Great.
There's a little of like, in your 40s, you're like, I don't, my friends are not talking about menopause. We're not talking about babies. We're not talking about like what society wants. And it's a very different space. And it was like, I felt empowered. I was able to share with my new friends because I have new friends. I upgraded some of them. And some of my old friends, I was like, hey, this is our history. And like, this is, and they were like, yes, this is like, because we don't talk about it. And we didn't think it was a big issue at the time. And now there's a lot of us like, no, like it was an issue. Or maybe this is something that would happen. And it's validating to see like someone who had a sense of compassion, who was there, who understood what was going on and didn't understand. Like now looking back 2020, I'm like, okay, well, this is the blueprint detox. Maybe it may not be the right thing to do.
I know. I remember my husband coming home and being like, I think you can eat a sandwich. And yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, a sandwich. Like,
yeah.
Hmm.
I did not know how to eat until I saw a registered dietitian. Like, actually, like, and basically it was like, oh, you're eating not a true.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? And it was like, no, here's where you're going to go. And I was like, oh, and that's what the shift happened. It was like, oh, I have to learn to trust science and learn to trust others.
Getting so much weird information all the time, right? I think that's another thing where it's like, I think that in the gap, this is another thing I talk about in the book, is that like in the gap, right? Like all these people are sort of appointing themselves authorities, even like, and I'm going to be honest, I know this isn't a very popular thing to say, but like, I kind of blame Oprah. Like,
yes, you
know? And we all love Oprah. And like, I was lucky enough to be like invited on her show. Although I think she meant to invite someone else, but she got me by accident, but whatever. I was so psyched.
You thought, like,
the motherland had that shouting thing where she like said my name. It was like, Amy LaRocca. And I was like, oh my God, I love Oprah. I've never been seen before. And then I was like, halfway through the interview, I was like, I think she wanted the other person from the New York Times. Cause there were like two menopause pieces in the Times. And halfway through, I was like, oh, they got the wrong one, but I don't care. I'm here with the bread. But like, I do kind of blame her because like Dr. Oz is not responsible. I don't think he's responsible medically. And I think he's endorsed a lot of shady practices. And he's endorsed a lot of shady practices. And it's dangerous. And I just think that we turn to people with very compromised ethics. Like he's endorsed, I encourage you to like read up on the time he endorsed like a green tea extract. Like he stands that are not medically proven that he stands to.
I think it's a lot of fake science, but then again, we got RFK.
And it's like we have, like Oprah has a lot of authority and she has Jenny McCarthy talking about vaccines and autism on her show. And then you're going to seed a whole world of, it's just,
but then we have, it's also like she was a feeding ground for like life coaches, manifestation, mm-hmm.
Yeah, like
a lot of stuff and diet culture, a lot of diet patty, like
a lot of diet culture, right? Like, so it's dangerous. It's dangerous to have for anyone to have that much influence, right? And a lot of people who are just so desperate for answers, I think, is part of it. It's like you also have to blame the medical community, right? Because it's like doctors are not given, have not traditionally until this point in time been given training in medical school on nutrition. They haven't been given training on menopause. They haven't been given, they've been given a very specific type of medical training where, as someone once, a sort of common expression is, if you get hit by a bus, you better hope you're in a big Western medical hospital because there's nowhere in the history of the world that will put you back together like a big Western hospital. Like, it is amazing. But when it comes to like dealing with a system that gives the doctor enough time to spend one-on-one with a patient, looking into educating a patient about prevention, lifestyle, care, things like that, this system is not set up to support a patient in that way, particularly if that patient is poor, particularly if that patient is female, particularly if that patient isn't white. Like, we're just not set up to support those patients. And so what that means is that people go looking. Mm-hmm. And then obviously that gap gets filled with people who may or may not have the right information.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, and then we have the like social media exploding and having an opportunity to not just see your local community, but see like the world and try to share the findings and share the specifics and how I fix my stuff and the aspirational and the sense of like, I have the solution. If here's the problem, it's burn marketing. So here's the problem. Here's the solution. And I've and you can pay me $999 or $101.
That's right. And it's like, if we're not getting the answers from like the authorities, then this space exists for people to come in and say, like, then you're just asking people to go hunting. And so what you really want, like what, you know, but I think when it gets to the more medical aspects of the wellness world is what you really want is really want the medical community to step up and say, we too are very interested in prevention. We too are very interested in how lifestyle changes are going to, because the truth is that the wealthier people in this country have access to better lifestyle. I think something we learned during COVID, like we learned that comorbidity in America is just basically a code word for poor, right? Mm-hmm. All of the conditions that were making people very susceptible to severe illness and death during COVID were really conditions of poverty.
Yeah.
And wealthy white people weren't really dying.
Yeah.
And disadvantaged people of color were.
Yeah.
And so I think when you look at what wellness is, it's sort of like icing on the cake for the rich, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this late stage capitalism, patriarchy, bad work. It's the sense of like who the haves and the have nots and the feel like you have the benefits if you have the right health insurance, if you have to be successful, like, and
you have access to good groceries,
You have access to grocery stores, access to medical centers, access to doctors, access to like healthcare, like access to actually transportation. As someone who lived without transportation in a non-walkable city, it is dire, like
dire. That's right.
So you have to, and it's expensive, and we live in an expensive place.
So I think when you get to the more medical aspects of wellness, like when, because the term is so broad, right? So it's like you've there's so many things. So when you're talking about the more medical aspects of what this movement is, it's something that can be something that's filling in the gaps for the underserved, for some underserved populations, right? So, and the underserved populations are very broad. So it could be women, because medical testing has historically been done on men. Conditions that disproportionately affect women have been researched far less than conditions that affect men. Menopause being the greatest example. It's going to happen to 50% of people.
And now we're in the bull moment. It's a bull rush in menopause. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe because I'm aware of it now, but like, it's a whole,
I have to say,
just stop. I'm like,
And culture, like, there's all this money to be made. And in America, if there's money to be made, people will, like, just be like, oh, yeah, great. Money.
I went to I saw quite a few of the ones that I went to. Like, my old fitness instructors in the 2010s were like having babies and stuff like that. Now they reinvented themselves as menopause experts. And I'm like, perimenopause experts. And it's like, I'm like, just because you went to perimenopause doesn't mean you make an expert, you know?
Maybe it would be better if they taught it in medical school, like as like a full topic. Like, I would personally love to get, I mean, and I'm lucky, I live in New York City and I have really good health insurance. So I was able to like find a great doctor. But I would much rather not have like this guru or that guru. I would just like to have my doctor know.
Yes.
I would just love to have it be part of the curriculum.
Yes.
So I think that's when you say like, oh, it's alternative this or it's alternative that, or I need this former actress to come out with a supplement line. I think that's where wellness is like, it becomes like, and it's like, well, actually, I would say in a perfect world, we don't need an actress to come out with a supplement line. We need medical schools and medical funding, if such things can exist in this country, to treat these things legitimately. And then you're sort of changing the economy of wellness to be something that can go back to fun and entertainment and like, take it or leave it, right? Like take the necessity aspect out of it. Because if there's no menopause, if you go to your gynecologist and you're in perimenopause and your gynecologist really doesn't know that much, you're going to be out there looking for alternatives.
Yeah.
And they might may or may not come from an expert. So I think like one of the ways that you could deal with that is maybe to like include these previously marginalized, and it's so weird that half the population is marginalized, but in that case, the population is marginalized, but like if you could sort of address some of these gaps in the more mainstream culture, some of these things that have fallen under the sort of shady wellness umbrella could move out of wellness and just into the culture.
Yes. Or have relations about supplements. It could be great.
Well, supplements. I mean, one of the things I found continually very confusing, and I have theories, but I just endlessly found very like, in researching this book, was people would endlessly talk about the desire, fears of the unnatural, right?
Yeah.
BPAs, plastics, microplastics, all the world, the kind of unknowable and the unknown.
Yeah, the dyes, the food dyes, because
foods, wanting to get off of prescription medications, all of these things. But then they would very happily take very unregulated, underlabeled supplements. And I have still not been able to equalize these things. Like, this is one of the wellness mysteries that I will never be able to settle, is that you have people who are expert in the gradations of organic certifications. You have people who will tell you this kale, not that kale. This soil for growing things, not that soil. The hybridization of the wheat versus the, you can go to this bakery, but not that bakery. And then they will take dusts, supplements, protein powders, bovine colostrum, whatever it is.
The greens. You got to talk about the bloom and the AG1s. The greens. And you're just like, you get your vegetables in a powder.
Everything in powder form, in plastic containers.
But it's not processed.
Made in factories, God knows where.
Yeah.
Entirely unregulated, entirely untested.
Yes. It doesn't make sense. It's a crowd, isn't it? Like, they're just like, it doesn't
all these things. And they will say, I can't believe you eat dairy. I can't believe you eat bread. I can't believe you eat pasta.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how many times I've sat at dinner tables, at like lunches, at events, with wellness people who look at me like I'm crazy because I eat bread, butter, dairy, meat, like all these foods, and they look at me like I'm just like suicidal. And they just consume these things. And so that is like, consider, there are so many, and it's again, back to packaging and branding. The QAnon products and the moon juice have a lot of the same ingredients in them.
Yeah.
So that is a wellness thing that I just, I've never gotten over. So I don't take supplements. Sometimes I will, except that, like, this is also the thing about me and wellness. Like, I don't take supplements except when I do, except when I've just read something and I'm like, oh, but this supplement is going to change everything. And then I'm like, what was I doing? And then I throw it out.
I am the same way. My doctor told me to take a supplement. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like, I take vitamin D because I was brand like deficient. But
yeah, if I get my blood work back at a physical and like in the middle of the winter in New York City, my doctor, your vitamin D is low, I will take a vitamin D supplement.
Yes, but not like this like long list of supplements.
Like, but like weirdo, like this is going to cure everything and pay your taxes and like do your dishes. Like I will admit, I'll be like, and then I'll do it for like 2 weeks and I'll be like, the hell's the matter with me? And then I'll just be like, oh, it's annoying me on my counter and throw it out.
Yeah.
So that's my cycle.
And we just was delightful. So first of all, tell us where we can find you online and tell us where to buy the
Sure. Okay. So where to find me online? I'm not a hugely online person, but I'm working on that now that I have a book out. So I have an Instagram. It currently has two posts, but I did my first story. And so if you look at Amy LaRocca author, I promise to update it more. And I am working on, I have a very nice young person who's working on a website for me that should be up and running any day now. And I think it's amylarocca.com. I think it's just amylarocca.com. And that'll have like all the news about the book, and I'm going on a little bit of a tour and everything. So I'll be around, and yeah. And you can get the book really anywhere. So any platform you're like into or comfortable shopping from should have it. Independent bookstores, big bookstores, like they've all got it.
And you know, read the audiobook. So for audiobook listeners, you can
hear read the audiobook myself, which was sorry.
Yes. So it is on
our advance, everyone.
Yeah. This is like the book that we're like, this is my history. This is your history. This is our history. Yeah. So this is like the book for you to get. It's a comprehensive look at the wellness industry from like meditation, supplements, functional health, everything. Like, whatever you think the wellness is, it's talked about.
Yeah. Well, last night I was out somewhere and someone was like telling me about this mattress. And I was like, oh no. So yeah, I was like, there's more, but
Awesome. Thank you, Amy, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Laura. It was great to meet you. Bye.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.